listening to the RDF Podcast.
Brought to you by Restoring the Faith Media. RestoringTheFaith.com.
Six hours of closing arguments in the rebuttal Monday. Two alternatives were dismissed in the jury that's going to decide the fate of the George Floyd trial. We got Trad Patrick joining us for the RTF podcast. This man, this officer, Trad Patrick, is on trial for charges of second-degree unintentional murder, third-degree murder, and second-degree manslaughter against, for the death of George Floyd on May 25th. We've all seen the 8 minutes of video. I can't breathe. Tonight is the night that the jury convenes.
I have to remind you, though, I have to correct you. It's St. George Floyd.
That's a good point.
Of the new conciliar church. So,
no, that's a good point. There are SJs around the world praying for blood. Playing for blood. Defense attorney Eric Nelson, he made an interesting point, and I want to jump right into it. In case the audience doesn't know, U.S. Representative Maxine Waters of Califreakia shows up, parachutes into Minnesota, says that BLM and Antifa protesters should get, quote, more confrontational. Now, within hours of her comments, BLM Antifa opened fire on the Minnesota State Guard, wounded several. There's at least one guy in a hospital right now. Is this the real insurrection?
The real insurrection was always about the Black Lives Matter movement. So last year, everybody thought it was like, I don't know, they like to use the term like grassroots and everything like that. It was never grassroots. It was never any of that. Mm-hmm. It was completely planned. From the beginning, people like Nancy Pelosi and Maxine Waters and others were always like big backers of the Black Lives Movement matter, which for those who don't know, the Black Lives Movement, Black Lives Matter movement was actually founded by three lesbian witches. No joke. They're literally witches. That have expressed that they are African occultist traditionalists. So they always knew that there was a high level of violence behind them. So even the Black Panthers looked at Black Lives Matter and went, yo, bro, that shit's crazy. You need to calm down, bro. But That's how bad Black Lives Matter is. And Black Lives Matter, of course, made a deal with the proverbial devil, with Antifa, which is nothing more than a bunch of like 18-year-old spurgy communist wannabes from the suburbs running around with black hoodies and masks on. And we are on podcast, right? So I can say masks.
Yeah, you can say the keywords. I prefer to keep it clean, though, in terms of just family friendly.
Yeah, family friendly, no problem. but that was always the intention of them. They aligned themselves with the John Brown Gun Club, the Black Bloc, and a couple other groups have all converged into this conglomerate, if you would. Which is very akin to the Antifa movement in the 1930s.
Yeah. This is a powder keg. I have some audio here of a black influencer. She's on TikTok. Her name is May Achols, and she's making threats. I don't know if you can hear this. Tell me if you can hear this.
If George Floyd's murderer is not sentenced,
I can't hear
just
it.
Just know that all hell is gonna break loose.
So basically she says, if George Floyd's murder is not sentenced, all hell is going to break loose. I believe that these people have been pre-positioning themselves in hotels around the major cities. They're waiting for the verdict. They might even know when the verdict is going to be announced. We don't know that. We have no idea how long the jury is going to deliberate. But they're perhaps planning, Trad Patrick, I think, for mayhem. I mean, this is like a pre-planned target.
Oh yeah, it absolutely is. They knew from day one. You know, if you go back to the summer of hate, whatever you want to call it, there where they all burning down the cities and everything like that. They knew that the narrative was false. The USCCB knew the narrative was false, but they needed a secular messiah, if you would, and that's essentially what George Floyd ended up becoming. Now, what they hid from you is that Floyd, number one, was a Mason. Number two, mm-hmm. he was a drug addict, a big one.
Mm-hmm.
He was a felon, not a one-time or two-time felon, but he was a career criminal. And not the good criminal, not the guy like Robin Hood out there stealing from the rich and giving to the poor. He was dealing dope into the inner city community. So this is something like the blacks themselves should really hate. They should look at people like him and go, you know what? He kind of got what he deserved. Okay. Because it's people like that. I look at people like that and I go, they're the worst kind of criminal because they prey on the weakest people in society and they use them to enrich themselves. And so while the church sits there and the traditions of the church preach that we should not be out there, you know, pursuing mammon, but somehow pursuing mammon is okay if you're dealing drugs and you're black, then it's okay. So they always knew it was a bullshit thing. Oops,
well,
sorry.
No, and here's the thing. I mean, like, I totally agree with you that when you listen to the defense's case, you say the guy had 98% alcohol, not alcohol, 98% oxygen in his blood.
Yeah.
If you suffocate to death, if somebody chokes you out and that's the cause of death, you don't have 98% oxygenation in your bloodstream. Okay. So, I mean, look, I don't know what the guy died of. It seems like he came back, tested positive, being high. The whole thing started because he was committing a crime anyway. I'm not saying that he deserved to die, okay? But for all of the Society of Jesuit, lispy, little pencil neck, you know who's, I'm sorry. It's just like, I don't know how you can have so much empathy for this situation or why you can be crying for, crying for his head.
Well, so it's the same thing, right? So the his defense attorney made what I think is probably one of the most brilliant arguments. And he's like, even if during the arrest sequence, even if things got a little out of hand, there was nothing that went against standard procedures for the police department. Also, there was no intention. So you can't prove any murder of any degree. 1, 2, 3, or 4. This murder's out, right? You really can't prove manslaughter either based on that defense, because if he's following procedure, which he did, there is now video evidence that his knee was on his neck for maybe about 5 seconds, and the rest of the time it was on his shoulders. Now anybody who knows, anybody who's been in law enforcement, and I do know people in law enforcement, I worked as shore patrol for many times.
Go.
Having worked in that shore patrol, you know that when people commit a crime, they largely don't want to be arrested. And if they could resist arrest, especially if they know that there's people around who are potentially filming, they take advantage of that situation. So the deck is always stacked against the police. And I'm not a giant supporter of the police. I'm just saying that most police are very well-intentioned people. Even if they are working for the state and at the behest of the state, they're well-intentioned. They don't wake up in the morning and go, oh, I'm going to go find me some minority and I'm just going to kill them. You know, that's not their intention. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, most cops will tell you that they would rather arrest a white guy then arrest somebody of color, because it's always going to end up pinning them as the bad guy. And, you know, that's the proof of the pudding. And that's what, you know, the defense really was. The defense really comes out in a lot of ways and says, look, you know, you're pinning my guy as a racist. He's never exhibited any behavior to that effect. He's never displayed any behavior to the fact that he, you know, wanted to hurt somebody with any intention of that. He was just doing his job against a guy who was resisting arrest, and he followed procedure. Police are trained. They go to the police academy. They're trained in how to deal with somebody resisting arrest. And what's going to come of this is that the police academies are going to tell guys, look, if they resist arrest, just let them go.
Mm-hmm.
Just let them go. Go back at another time, find them and arrest them when things are calmer.
Come back when you have overwhelming firepower, when you're vastly outnumbering the guy, perhaps when he comes down from as high from whatever crime he's committing, just let him go. You know, we want Barabbas. I'm bringing in some audio right now, and I'm going to play it so that you can hear it as well. And this goes back to the notion that BLM is that the three co-founders are actually trained Marxists. Let me know if you can hear this. This is an interview with one of the... This has long been purged from the internet, but of course I have a copy. And one of the three lesbian co-founders of BLM is admitting to being a trained Marxist. Here it is.
Summarize for us how you see the origins, politics, and purpose of Black Lives Matter.
I think... That's a great question. And the first place I'll go is the origins come from a deep place of Black love and Black rage. We believe that we are in a state of emergency. And that state of emergency looks like a crisis in the Black community at some of the highest levels, being murdered by the state, incarcerated at some of the highest rates, being unemployed at some of the highest rates, our inability to live a life of dignity. And so Black Lives Matter was a call for all Black lives. And it was important for us as Black women, and two of which are queer, was to actually talk about the totality of Black life. We actually do have an ideological frame. Myself and Alicia in particular are trained organizers. We are trained Marxists. We are super... versed on sort of ideological theories. And I think that what we really try to do is build a movement that could be utilized by many, many Black folk.
So they're queer. They're not lesbian. I'm sorry. I misspoke. I used my wrong alphabet term. They're trained Marxists, Trad Patrick. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're admitting to it.
Well, it's true. I mean, even Philip K. Dick, who authored the novel that ended up becoming the Amazon TV series called Man in the High Castle, showed that at the time, the Black community was heavily influenced by Marx and Marxism and liberalism. Even when you fast forward 20 years from that time period and you get to Malcolm X, who originally starts out like that, right? Malcolm X starts out like that. He starts out as a Muslim and all these other things. And Malcolm X wakes up. I'm being used by the people I think are my enemy, but in reality, my enemy is actually people that they don't want me to name. It's not white people in general that are my enemy. And Malcolm X made this argument, right? He says, look, it's not white people as a general persuasion that are my enemy, but it's white liberals that are my enemy. And so he wakes up and he tosses aside Muslim. He tosses aside Marxism. And he says, look, the real enemy here is Marxism and liberalism. And who influences this but the Jewish people? They're really the influence. They're really the people. So, I mean, if you look at it, and these people will use the image of Malcolm X. But Malcolm X, if he was alive today, he would hate those people, because what he wanted is the same thing that other people, even like myself, would say is the ideal, which is the idea of a return, if you would, to a self-segregated society. And where these people look at it from a very different standpoint. Now, I know a lot of people are going to hear this and they're going to go, oh, he's a racist. He wants segregation. No, no, no. I want the same thing that somebody like Malcolm X wanted, which was for government to get out of race, for people to wake up to see who the real influence was, which was Marxism. And Marxism preys upon the weakest of society. And now I'm not saying that all black people are weak or anything like that, but I'm saying in America, the majority of inner city blacks like these women, like the people in Black Lives Matter.
There's no doubt that they're influenced. There's no doubt that they're disadvantaged. I mean, they're forced to go to these dropout factory high schools that, you know, are just not on par and all this stuff. But look, I want to transition though. I want to transition into sort of like the so what? What do we do with this information? Because, like I said, Maxine Waters parachutes into Minnesota over the weekend. She says that the protesters, whether they be BLM, trained Marxist, Antifa, you know, white liberals, they should get more confrontational if there's no guilty verdict. So if the verdict doesn't go your way, you need to get more confrontational. Now, here's what the judge said about that. The judge said, quote, "I'll give you that Congressman Waters may have given you something on appeal that may result on this whole trial being overturned." And that's the key point here. Mm-hmm. I think that Maxine Waters parachutes into Minnesota, says something very inciting, potentially throws this jury into a hung jury, inconclusive result. I mean, look, if there's not a guilty verdict, people are going to rise up, that there's going to be problems. If there's an inconclusive verdict, though, Trad Patrick, I think that's even worse. And I think that this woman, Maxine Waters, Congresswoman of Southern California, I think that she's intentionally trying to achieve that outcome because that is what they want. They want protests. They want violence. They want chaos.
Well, you got to look at her history. She's done this before. She came out and told them beforehand with the last summer of the inner city, the summer of diversity, if you want to say, where she told them to get more violent, where she told them to go to people's homes. And that's exactly what they started doing. So they're empowered by her voice, if you would, to a large degree. And the problem is that parliamentary rules are thrown out the window when it's liberals. If it's a Republican, which I don't like Republicans any more than I like Democrats, but the reality is if it's a white Republican, and you can use the example of Steve King from Iowa, right? He comes out and he just says, look, you know, there's a lot of anti-white rhetoric going on, right? All of a sudden, he's like, he's a Nazi, he's KKK, he's all these things. He reads V Dare, how dare he? He reads an anti-immigration website. And so, you know, it's this idea of America, right? America hates Western civilization. I talked about this with Michael Beckenwald on my show. It hates the idea of Christendom. It hates the idea of Western society. It wants to remodel America in the eyes of Africa, which, by the way, is not a paradise. I've been there. It's literally a violent crap hole. And, you know, the idea of it is not a Marvel movie. There are no flying cars. There's no golden cities hiding in the jungles or anything like that. It doesn't exist. And so that whole thing,
I thought that was
a
pretty
ridiculous.
Good movie, though.
I didn't. I thought it was horrible. I don't watch Marvel movies. They're garbage. But
no, I'm talking about a technical execution perspective. But okay, so look, they're intentionally causing, they're inciting violence. This isn't the same thing as, you know, Trump supposedly inciting violence at the Capitol and all this, the false flag nonsense. No, they legit want small businesses to burn. They want statues to come down. They want people to feel unsafe and insecure. This is part of a Marxist takeover. They are trained Marxists. They admit it. It's I mean, this is what they want to do. So what do we do about this information? Our cities are going to blow up the moment that this jury either gets hung or announces a not guilty verdict. There's going to be violence in the street, perhaps worse than the summer of 2020, perhaps. How do we prepare for that?
The only way you can prepare for it is a series that I'm doing right now on literally preparing yourself, right? Which is, you know, how you've got to prepare yourself moving forward. What do you carry? What do you have on you? You know, the problem is that Americans have gotten very stagnant. They go, you know what? I've gone to work every day. Nothing happens. And they don't realize that, if you're working in a major city, there's a good chance that something's going to happen. I mean, it happened during the summer of diversity in places like North Dakota. I mean, so it can happen anywhere, and you have to be ready for it. And you have to understand the rules, because there's rules. There's laws, and you have to protect yourself in that situation. And one of the things I say all the time is, if you go out looking like you're, you know, dressed for war, even if you're in the right, they're going to hang you in a jury that you are all these things, because you were prepared for it. So there are ways to prepare yourself to be ready for this inevitable outcome, where you can look like the good guy. And that's what you want to do. You want to protect yourself, and you want to come out looking like the good guy, because ultimately they are the bad guys. There's no two ways about it. I don't care what the Legionnaires of Christ or the SJs or any of the others out there will say. They're the bad guys. And the reason that they're the bad guys is they are Marxists. Every single one of these members of Black Lives Matter, John Brown Gun Club, Antifa, Black Bloc, they are all devout Marxists. They believe that somehow following the teachings of basically a rat-infested, crap-hole-living guy like Karl Marx is going to bring them this utopian society of equality. But better yet, Black Lives Matter doesn't want equality. That's the funny thing. They want you. They want people like you. They want people like me to be placed under them. And that's why they'll go into places and they'll tell you, kneel for me. Well, as I said in a show I did today, they pick their targets. If you look like a target, they will make you their girl. They will make you kneel. They will make you kiss their feet. They will make you give them money. So one of the biggest things you have to know is how to not look like you're a target of these people. And that's very hard for Americans because we don't want to give up comfort.
Yeah, that's a good point. All those are good points. I mean, it's a sad day in the United States of America where you have to prepare yourself to look like a good guy in front of a jury. And it's not a jury of your peers. It's a jury of the lowest common denominator.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, no offense, but there's not really a jury of your peers. There's not really a jury of my peers. It's not like we're going to be tried by traditional Catholics. It's not like we're going to be tried by business owners, by family men, by veterans. But no, we're going to be tried by the people who can't get out of jury duty.
One of the biggest things that they do is law firms pay tons of money for psychological profilers. And the psychological profiles actually run mock trials in mock courtrooms where they film everything. They film the reactions. They bring in people who are just like the people. They share everything to the people that are already picked to be on the trial. And they go to the jury and they just start asking questions so that they can eliminate people from that jury because the prosecution wants to stack the deck of the jury. Now, I know from being a veteran that if I ever got in real trouble in the military, I don't have a jury of my peers. I have a jury of 12 officers. Okay. 9 times out of 10, those officers are not guys like me. They're not coming from the same MOS. They're not any of those things. They're picked for the particular purpose that they shared nothing in common with me. And it's the same thing in the private sector, where that is what happens. And the prosecution goes there to eliminate everybody who will not give them the verdict that they want. And so you could be the most innocent guy on the planet, but the 12 people that the prosecution has literally handpicked are the ones deciding. And the fact that we did away with the idea of actually arguing in jurisprudence, where lawyers used to be great orators, they used to be great showmen, they used to be able to influence the emotions of the jury. we've gotten away from that. We've actually outlawed that style of jurisprudence, which was the cornerstone of Roman society, where orators, for example, would get up there, they would play an incredible case, they would be, there was showmanship, there was everything else, and they would get people to understand from an emotional standpoint, but you're not allowed to do that anymore. So you get to the point where now you have to play against everybody. And the reality is that we put a lot of innocent people in prison in this country. I'll give you an example. Kyle Rittenhouse, right?
Mm.
Innocent guy. I'll give you another example. This kid in Charlottesville, right? Was he stupid? Yes. Was he intentionally trying to hurt somebody? I don't think so. But the reality is at the same time that this guy got a double life sentence at the age of 19, an illegal alien went on a pier in San Francisco, picked up a gun, shot an innocent woman in the head and killed her. And he got off scot-free. Got off scot-free. No jail time. He got a bunch of money from the state, and he got made a citizen as well. Wasn't even turned over to INS. Nothing. Yeah. Because that's what our society is about. And it's the same thing here, that this guy, Chauvin or whatever, I can't pronounce his name, but even if he gets off, his life is over. My understanding, his wife has already left him. He's lost his home. He's lost his job. He's never going to be able to be a cop again. That's just out of the question. I don't know how long he was a cop, but let's just say 10 years at his age, he was a cop. What's he going to do now? No company's going to hire him. His life is effectively over. Even if he's innocent, which he is, we all know he's innocent. We all know that he did not intentionally set out to kill this guy. But his life is over. And that's the greatest travesty of justice. While Maxine Waters is parading around out there with her cowboy hat and her fake sequins shirts on and everything else,
right?
You know, she's an example of everything that is wrong with our entire system of government.
Well, that's,
and if people need to wake up to that fact right now.
Let's talk about the police for a second, because I suspect you and I are on the same page about that. And this is I'm going to say something controversial, not to you, but to the audience. From my point of view, it is becoming more and more increasingly difficult to back the blue. I see militarized police forces driving around downtown Los Angeles in up-armored vehicles that we used to use in Afghanistan. I see heavily armored, heavily armed, militaristic-looking police, you know, supposedly fighting Antifa and BLM, depending on the jurisdiction. But most concerningly to me, I see police enforcing the COVIDian nonsense that we're living through right now. They're pulling people over. They're pulling them out of their houses. They're doing contact tracing. They're enforcing mask mandates. They're yanking pregnant women out of mass. They're shutting down mass around the world. It's happening in London. It's happening in Ireland. They're doing mass rocks in Ireland again. It's like the Reformation. So I look at it and I'm like, I think that this is the perfect distraction. Maxine Waters comes in. She incites violence. She ensures that there's going to be riots so that all of the red-blooded conservative Americans, rah-rah, Tea Party, GOP boomers, can sit there and say, I support the police and it's a thin blue line between us and chaos. And then you can set up this fake, phony theater, this political theater that does result in people getting their heads bashed in between the tools of the left and the tools of the right. Meanwhile, who benefits? You know what I mean? And that's what I'm looking at. Maybe that's too conspiratorial. Maybe that's silly. Maybe, you know, you're going to disagree with that. But I look at it and I say, both sides are wrong. It's all fake. It's all silly.
It absolutely is. And it's not conspiratorial at all. I mean, if anything, the last 2 years has taught us that most of the conspiracy people are the normal people, and the people who aren't listening to that are actually the people who are, you know, for the large part, either they're still asleep at the wheel. There's still a lot of things going on. But the reality of the situation is that like I said, I'm not a supporter of the police. And I'll tell you why I'm not a supporter of the police. Exactly the reasons you said. The police, instead of standing up, and I want to make sure I say this very correctly. There are some good cops out there that are like, you know what, I'm not arresting somebody. I'm not shutting down their business. But the problem is that, you know, they're not enough of them. And so a lot of these guys become cops for several bad reasons. You know, they grew up nerds and weak and, you know, everything else. And so they get the badge and the gun and then they go out and they do, you know, if the state says go after these people and these people are easy targets. Again, knowing your target, the cops are the same way. They know their target. They know that law abiding, you know, suburban folks that just want to go to the gym are an easy target, whereas going off after a bunch of Antifa rioting in the streets, that's not an easy target. So instead, they're going to sit at the station with their feet up watching the local baseball game. And that's the reality of the situation. It's not conspiracy. It's truth. It's truth that's been going on in this country for 75 years now. And, you know, it's all a joke, right? It's all political theater. Now Kevin McCarthy stands up and he wants a resolution to censor Maxine Waters. They tried that before. Why doesn't it work? Because the House has always been democratically controlled. It's only been, you know, short periods of time where the Republicans have ever controlled the House. And the reason for that is that there are more liberal districts in the United States than there are conservative districts. That's the reality of the situation. You know, especially when you look at the South, for example, a lot of people think the South is so based. It's so right wing. But the truth of the matter is look at where most of your liberal leaning Congress people come from. Senators have always been split because at least you're able to get one half of the state that is right wing to elect a right wing or an American right wing. Let's make sure we make that distinction, because the American right wing is not right wing, but mm-hmm. it's at least better than the liberals. Mm-hmm. And the reality of the situation is nothing's going to happen to Maxine Waters. She's not going to lose her job. She's going to keep getting elected. She'll die in office because that's the way they are. You look at Jim Byrd, for example, died in office, you know, and again, the situation changes based upon whether you have an R or D after your name, right? He was a grand wizard of the KKK, but it was okay. Hillary Clinton loved him. She was, you know, she said he was her political mentor. Right. It was OK that, you know, even till his death, he was a card carrying member of the Klan. It's OK because he had a D after his name and he was liberal with his politics.
All right. So if we establish then that the police are being used, that the white liberals in Portland chic, you know, get up and, you know, posing as Antifa are being used. Black Lives Matter, Marxist trained, they're being used. Let's spend a couple minutes and just talk about why they're being used, what they're trying to implement, and how we can fight back. Because, I mean, honestly, I think a lot of people are feeling, they're feeling like they can't fight back. They're feeling like it's over. It's a lost cause, you know? Like, there's definitely a feeling of despair within the conservative, traditionalists, you know, kind of market that you and I talk to, our friends, our buddies, our the people that we care about, people who really do believe the Catholic faith. And I think a lot of them are kind of waking up. They're like, wow, Trump was actually just a vaccine salesman. Things actually got way worse under Trump. Oh man, the monopoly money got worse. Now they're pushing, you know, surveillance everywhere. I mean, only every measurable variable got worse under Trump. And now they're saying, They're starting to wake up, whereas you and I were like the whole time, we were like, this guy, I mean, yeah, I like liberal tears and I like sweetening my coffee with it every morning and whatever, but I'm not going to be manipulated by that like so many people were. And I think a lot of people are now kind of awake to the fact that we're being robbed of our country, and it feels like there's almost nothing we can do about it. They're doing it right before our eyes, step by step. I can see the playbook, Trad Patrick. Hear me out on this. Tell me what you think. I think that we're in spring training right now. They're trying to get as many people riled up as possible. They're going to have this verdict. There's another shooting. There might even be another shooting. We're going to have another long summer of riots and protests and racial uprising and all that stuff. It's all organized. It's all pre-planned. It's theatrical. People are just being manipulated. Then they're going to release another version of the COVID 1984, and it's going to be, you know, just as deadly as the first one, but it's going to sound really bad. And, you know, it's probably going to hit the people who are vaccinated harder than the ones that are not because of the spike proteins and the mRNA and, you know, and all that. And it's going to, but they're going to blame us. They're going to blame conservatives, traditionalists, people who have family values. They're going to try to, I mean, this is going to be, so I think we're heading into a kind of a two-step phase where we have violence followed by a virus followed by absolute anarchy, totalitarian lockdown, and there's going to be shortage of food, and they're going to, and you know, there's going to be shortage of currency. You know, we still don't have coins in circulation right now. There's no lumber in circulation right now. I mean, if a plywood board costs $100, a 2x4 costs $10. I mean, like, you're in construction. I think they're trying to crash the economy, crash everything, bring everything to the ground, kill as many people as possible. I mean, now at this point, I might as well just put the freaking antenna on my head because I sound like a nut.
No, it's not. It's not. And I want to remind people, if you look back to a time period, which is the Great Awakening, I call it, of the late 1920s. And the early 30s, where you start to get people like Franco and Dollfuss and Salazar and Condreau and Mussolini and everybody else, people felt the same way. You know, people felt the same way. Like, you know, there's nothing I could do. And it was a small group of people. Now, the problem is, and a lot of people will try this and they'll say, well, it only takes, you know, X amount of population to change things. The problem with America is you don't have that percentage, right? America, to me, I don't want to say is lost, but I will say that it's on life support. America's on life support right now. And the reason is that, and you see this with the bogus ordo, right? The bogus ordo is out there ramping up the and they've been doing this for the past several months. They've been ramping up the anti-racism, the anti-Semitism, the anti-everything, right? And getting more and more of their people. And you've seen this, right? And we talked about this, how more and more people are gravitating toward the idea of post-tradum and everything else because it's comfortable. And it's easy to go there because you don't have to say or believe in the uncomfortable truths. And the uncomfortable truths are simple, that we live in a nation and a time where Christendom, which is the West, has been taken over since about the 1940s by a Marxist liberal infiltration. And Charles Lindbergh warned us about this. He says, look, the entirety of the West is about to fall to this great evil. And he wasn't a Catholic. You know, sometimes a lot of Catholics forget that, you know, sometimes we have people that aren't Catholic that think like us. And you need to heed what they're saying. And he's saying it. He's like, look, we're being taken over by these bankers. We're being taken over by usury. We're being taken over by Marxism. And all these things ultimately follow that same liberal leftist agenda. And we didn't listen in America. America became this, we're a melting pot, which, by the way, we never were a melting pot. Contrary to popular belief, that term was coined by people like Theodore Herzl, who wanted to change the outlook of America. They wanted to get away from that because prior to the immigration reform in 1965, America would only take people that were at least third generation European. Okay? There was only a small minority of people that were allowed into the country at a time. Okay. And then you get the 1965 immigration reform, which again opens up the borders, which opens up even to more infiltration from these people. So you get the Frankfurt School, which really starts to push a lot of this ideology. So everybody, like, it's like with Vatican II, everybody thinks that all of a sudden in 1960, the church was infiltrated. No, it started a lot sooner than that. It started in 1900. Okay. And it really, if you really want to go further back, it really starts to become an infiltration in the church about the time of the French Revolution. And you start to get a lot of these people, of course, by 1900, by about 100 and some odd years later, there's really so many people in the church now in positions as rectors of seminaries and all these other things. You start to see women teaching in seminaries. You start to see a lot of these changes. So even the church changes. And as I've said several times, as goes society, so went the church. So if you don't fix society, you're not going to fix the church. And that's the problem with most Catholics, is that they've got blinders on and they're like, oh, we just got to get rid of these pedo predator priests and everything will be fine. But the reality of the situation is there's so few. There's so few cases of pedo predator priests. And most of them have already been, to a large degree, tossed out of the church. Or arrested or put in jail or all these other things. The bigger problem in the church is not that. And I'm not saying that that's not a problem. It is a problem. But yeah, that's a problem born out of the other problem.
I think it's
which
a problem.
Is in fact liberalism.
No, I mean, I think it's a problem. I think it's a pretty widespread problem.
It is a problem. That's not at all what I'm saying. And a lot of people take me when I say this as saying it's not. It is a problem, but it is a problem born out of the ideals of liberalism.
Yeah.
Because go back to the Roman Republic, and, you know, there's a lot of lies told about the Roman Republic. But the truth is, if you were caught being a homosexual, there was a good chance that you were going to be put to death for that, because it was considered, even under the pagan Roman Empire, it was considered disgusting. And they did not advocate for it at all. Mm-hmm. Throughout society, we realized what the problem was, and it was liberalism.
And even in the old rubrics of the church, and I'm going to cut to some breaking news here that I just received. But even in the old rubrics of the church, if you were a seminarian and you were found to be disordered, that was it. There's no rehabilitation for that. There was no like, well, maybe we can ordain this person. Oh, he went to confession. Oh, he's really sorry. Oh, he's not going to do it again. He's going to make a commitment to celibacy. What does it matter? He's celibate. No. If you were disordered, that was it. You were done, period. Blacklisted. The way they blacklist people in Hollywood, you know, it's like you were done. That's how they dealt with it. Patrick, Tread Patrick, runs a YouTube channel. It's called Rights and Duties. I'm a subscriber. I love Rights and Duties. You sometimes put out podcast stuff too when it's too spicy for YouTube, which is exactly what you and I are doing right now. I want you to react to the following breaking news 8 minutes ago as of just us recording this podcast. So by the time it's out, maybe it'll be less than an hour old. Church on fire in Minneapolis right now. Church on fire. The Sacred Heart of Jesus, Polish National Catholic Church, on fire right now. It's ablaze. Mm-hmm. Now, ask yourself, why would the Black Lives Matter movement target a Polish Catholic church in Minneapolis of all the possible places? Did they attack a government building? Did they attack a police headquarters? Did they attack the IRS? Did they attack the central bank? Did they attack any bank? Did they attack a Starbucks? Did they attack any of the major corporations that outsource jobs and deprive American citizens of meaningful work? Did they attack the Apple Store? Did they attack Google that spies on them? No, they attack a Roman Catholic church. Is that random?
No. It's always, I mean, let's look at history, right? It's always been this way. Whether it's pagan LARPy idiots in Finland and Norway burning down Catholic churches, or it's any of these other things, it's all the same, right? So the church represents two things to them. Okay. First and foremost, it represents white, right? And that's, you know, it's an innocuous term. We say white, whatever, but that's what it represents to these people. It represents white. It represents patriarchy. It represents all of those things that they hate. But secondly, it represents structure and order. And one of the things they don't like is structure and order. You talk about breaking news in my Telegram channel. Somebody just posted that there's a flyer being sent around in Portland where it literally says, no matter what the verdict is, we go hard for George Floyd. It gives the times and the dates. So it's Chapman Square, 3 p.m., Woodland Park, 8 p.m. No streamers, no peace police, just rage. Don't shoot. Portland has our backs. I don't know what that is. Have the NLG number on you. Don't know what that is. Stay with a buddy. You have the right to protest. What is the idea of protest to these people? See, the difference is, and this is something that a lot of people, especially the normie neo-trads and post-trads and everything, don't get. They look at the idea of like Mussolini and something and people like that, and they go, oh, those people were violent and this and that. The reality of the situation is that the black shirt march on Rome, there wasn't a single gun on any of those people. There was no violence. There was no anything. Their protest was literally they marched up to Rome. They gave a couple speeches. Next thing you know, the king and everybody else is talking to Mussolini and saying, look, you know, maybe you're right and we need a little bit of help here and all of this. And that's the reality of the situation. You want to talk about breaking news? I see a video on my thing that somebody just shared to me, right? Somebody shares a video. Rookie cop gunned down by drug dealer, right?
Yeah.
He pulls the guy over.
I'm watching it right now.
Pulls a guy over on a street, right? It looks like a pretty, I don't want to say deserted street, but it looks like a pretty rural area. Guy gets out. He's wearing body armor. So this guy is definitely ready. He's not white. He's not black, excuse me. He's either white or Hispanic, but from the look of him, he's a drug dealer. He comes out and he guns down this police officer, shoots him about six times, gets in the truck and leaves. And the same people who are out there saying that, you know, no peace, just rage for George Floyd are the same people who would say that this guy is okay. Because the idea is that, you know, if you're selling drugs, somehow you had to sell drugs, right? If you're so entrepreneurial that you can exist in what is probably one of the most dangerous professions out there, drug dealing and stuff like that, well, with a little bit of effort, you could, in fact, be running any company in this country. There is the idea that this country somehow holds people back from having particular jobs or anything like that. It's a nonsensical argument. In this country, any company will basically hire anybody as long as that person can make money for that company. They don't care who you are. They don't care what you look like. They don't even care whether or not you have a degree or anything like that. A lot of people are like, oh, well, I don't have a master's degree and stuff like that. Well, the reality of the situation is most of the billionaires in this company don't even have an undergraduate degree. You look at Bill Gates. He was thrown out of college. Steve Jobs, Steve Wozniak, Jeff Bezos, the list goes on. These people never had degrees. They never had anything. They got their starts. The reality of the situation is the people in America want life like they want their food. They want it cheap. They want it greasy. They want it fast. And that's how they want it. And they want it dangerous.
Yeah.
Because, as we know, eating freaking fast food is going to kill you.
And this kind of speaks to like the – you and I like to talk about economics. We've talked about getting together before about this particular topic and really delving into it. And you brought up usury earlier, but in the United States of America, the field of economics, the study of economics is totally divorced from the field, the study of ethics and morals. And in the history of Western thought, economics was a subset of really of theology. And because it has to do with the how do you set up a system which takes care of everybody, which makes sure that people's basic needs are met? How do you appropriate assets? How do you ensure that people can have a living wage, that they can provide for themselves, that they can live Catholic lives? I mean, at its most basic fundamental, if when you boil it down, economics is basically that the Maslow's hierarchy of needs. If you are so focused on food and shelter and survival, then you can't really contemplate the higher things, the higher goods, the good, the true, and the beautiful. And so that's, you know, that's like the history of economics. Then comes along Adam Smith. Adam Smith basically applies this, you know, this British sense of survival of the fittest, this evolutionist theory he applies it into economics, divorces it totally from ethics and from morality. And you're right. In the United States of America, because we're supposedly egalitarian, even though we're not, in the absence of nobility, in the absence of aristocracy, we have the billionaire class, the industrialists. And so Jay-Z is a billionaire because he came up with this idea for Beats. He branded it and sold it, and Apple bought it. Now he's an aristocrat. Now he's somebody to look up to. He literally puts out content, raps about killing cops, killing civilians, raping women. And he's an aristocrat in the United States of America because he makes money. And this perversion of morality goes back. I mean, really, it predates the big industrialists, the Roosevelts and the Rockefellers and the J.P. Morgans and all of them. But those guys, they're the true aristocrats in this country, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. The reality of the situation is that our society, just like work, is the same thing with culture. Our society looks for the cheapest, quickest solution to everything, and that includes culture. And so, of course, you get people like Jay-Z and Kanye, and everybody's like all over them, and they think that they're somehow these great examples of success. And the reality is that no, they're not. The problem is that you were sold on this idea of this crap that somebody relabeled art. And you were sold on it, and many millions and millions of people in the suburbs were sold on it, and they go out and they buy this crap. And it's funny because today I was listening to Wagner, who I absolutely think was one of the most brilliant composers that ever existed. But somebody like Wagner, today in our society, most people couldn't understand the genius that was Wagner because they're so dumbed down by society that they look at things like Jay-Z, they look at things like Beyonce, they look at things like, I don't even know, what's his name, Eminem's or whatever. And they look at these people and they go, oh, this guy's talented. You know, I love to hear when I hear people say, oh, you know, so-and-so's a friggin' poet, bro. Really? You're a poet because you're over there rapping and grabbing your crotch and jumping around on stage and throwing your arm in the air. That's not poetry. Dante's poetry. You know, but our society doesn't read Dante. Our society doesn't read classics. How many people coming up through society today do you know that have read the Odyssey, for example, which is a hallmark of Western society? And many Catholics will say, I'm not going to read the Odyssey because it's pagan. Well, that's what society was at the time, you moron. It was pagan, but it led to where we are today. And I'm not saying go out and be a pagan and all that, but I'm saying classics like the Odyssey, for example, or classics like the Iliad or Dante's Inferno or Paradise Lost or stuff like that. That is art. What you have today is a bunch of crypto pseudo aristocrats who have been propped up by a society that is built around the idea of mammon. And, you know, you could talk about it all you want. Money has a necessary purpose, right? And that purpose is, as many people have made this equation, right? If I'm a shoemaker and I need to buy a house, I can't barter enough shoes to buy a house. It just doesn't work. So what I do is I sell enough shoes to be able to afford the house. But in the meantime, I barter the shoes for other things I need. So if I could barter the shoes to the candlestick maker and I give him a couple pairs of shoes and he gives me, you know, a couple dozen candles, and then I only use that money that I've earned to buy the house, buy the things that I can't either barter or produce or make myself. In our society, money has become something that we pursue above all else. And that's why housing is through the roof. You brought up lumber. Hey, you know what BLM did? BLM just made people that they supposedly, quote unquote, hate even richer. They have made the lumber industry, which has been taking advantage of the small guy now for 3 years. Everybody thinks that this just happened with COVID. The price of building materials was going up before COVID ever happened, and it had to do with the idiot Trump. Not really. Everybody's like, oh, he's a genius when it comes to business. No, he wasn't. He's a genius when it came to dealing with, building in Manhattan or something like that, or making a casino. But if you ask Trump what the price of building material is, he has no idea. He doesn't do that. He doesn't negotiate any of that stuff. So he screwed that up 3 years ago.
Wouldn't you love to be a sub on one of his jobs? You could literally charge whatever you want. He doesn't care.
He doesn't. And he's the example. I could charge to most of these major corporations that I do work for. I could charge them whatever. And I could go back to them at any time and say, hey, the price of building material went up. And they're going to go, hey, no problem. Just, submit a change order. We get it. Times are tough, blah, blah, blah. And so you submit a change order. And your change order gets paid because they want to build, because they're the people who can afford to build right now. And housing, who can afford to build? Pulte, Beazer, Toll Brothers, the list goes on. All of these degenerate home builders that are taking advantage. And these people don't care who they sell to. They don't care if they build 100 homes and they sell them.
And these master plan communities, you and I have talked about this in other venues as well. And I don't necessarily want to rehash it because I do have an actual question for you. However, these master plan communities, these major national home builders, this is the antithesis of Catholic culture. This is the antithesis. Living in a subdivision is not Catholic. It's Protestant. No, it's worse than Protestant. It's communist. That's what it is. Catholic culture has a certain way of life, has a certain organization of society. And what we have in the United States with strip malls, suburbs, with community pools, and I've got a... did you know, Trad Patrick, that I have a tennis court in my subdevelopment? I'm so lucky. And some people in my subdevelopment actually have enough discretionary income to buy a golf cart so that they can drive over to the tennis court. Isn't freedom so based? I don't expect you to respond to that because I kind of do want to direct your commentary. I want to kind of delve into, just for a few minutes here, the very practical things that we can do. If you accept the notion that they are trying to enslave us in a global communist, one world government, one world religion, the COVID religion, one world way of doing things, borderless society, if you see that coming, if you feel it in your blood, and so many of you do, and if you don't, then I don't know why you're listening to this podcast. I mean, just go watch Netflix and chill, okay? What do we do? How do we become self-sufficient? How do we protect ourselves from the cashless society, from the mobs and Antifa, Black Lives Matter, the bogus ordo, the false Catholic Church posing as the real Catholic Church, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. How do we cope with 2021?
Well, it's 2021, but really, if you look toward the end of 2021 going to 2022, things are going to get a lot worse. And the reason is that 85% of all boomers will be retired. They will be collecting Social Security, which will crash the economic system. They knew this. They knew this 50 years ago. The first thing that they thought was letting third worlders in. And then they realized about 10 years ago that the third worlders were working in low paying jobs that would never be able to keep up with the demand. They were either themselves on government assistance or they were in prison. So they became a drain on the society. So even the Democrats, to a large degree, are not really all that open to the idea of open borders, which is good. I mean, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm against open borders too. I'm against immigration, period. But what they realized is that things are going to get really bad and they're going to get uncomfortable about the summer. That's when you're going to see mass amounts of people applying for Social Security. That's when you're going to see mass riots. That's when you're going to see a lot of this stuff really start to take control, if you would, of society. And they don't have control anymore. They've been putting Band-Aid after Band-Aid after Band-Aid on the problems, and they've run out of Band-Aids, right? They're looking at an empty box right now. And so the answer is simple. Buy whatever you can when it comes to land. a lot of people say to me, you know, I want to be close to an SSPX parish. Well, I hate to break the bad news to you. It's not going to happen. The further you move away from the metroplexes and the suburbs and stuff like that, the further you're going to get away from a society chapel or even a TLM church. That's just the reality of the situation. One of the things that the society has not done a good job about, which I am an ardent supporter of the society, and I talk to the society priests and I tell them this too, is they are not reaching out to these rural communities. But I think when they see what's going to happen, you're going to have, I want to use the term, it's a bad term, but I'm going to use it anyway. You're going to see white flight. The whites are going to reject modernity. They're going to reject the suburbs. They're going to reject the cities. They're going to look for those strips of land, right? And you can buy strips of land. I want to be honest with everybody. You can buy strips of land. You're going to have two options where it's affordable. You're either going to have a trailer on it, which is probably run down, and you're going to have to do a bunch of work to it, or it's not going to have a home at all. And the reality of the situation is it's cheaper to buy that home with nothing on it, plop down an RV or a yurt or something like that, live in it in the meantime, get out there, rent a ditch witch. They're pretty cheap at Home Depot. You run your PVC underground. You pull your cable in, and then you hire the electric company to come in and do the connections, and you drop a used a double wide or something like that on the property. You're not going to have – I hate to tell this to people because it's a reality situation, okay? And the reality is you're not going to have – that farmhouse built in 1920. You're not going to have that turn of the century of the late 18th century going into the 19th century or the 19th century going into the 20th century. You're not going to get that home because that home is being bought up by foreign enterprise. The land is being raped by industry and by foreign nationals. You're not going to get that. And if you don't get right with the fact that if you want to escape what's coming, you got to get away from it. And to get away from it, you got to get away from suburbia. You've got to get away from the cities, and you've got to go somewhere that's going to be uncomfortable. And maybe you do have to drive 2 or 3 hours to a decent mass, or maybe you get lucky, because the reality is that the further you get out in rural America, the more likely it is that you're going to find a Catholic church that, well, they might be part of the diocese. They might be part of all that, but that particular bogus ordo mass might just be traditional enough where they won't have Eucharistic ministers. They won't have the hand holding. They won't have the female altar service.
Yeah. Well, a lot of the trad leaning diocesan priests get shoved out into the middle of nowhere, mm-hmm. you know, so that the bishop doesn't have to deal with them. So exactly. I think you're right. I think you're right. To be honest, I mean, yeah, people talk about this Reverend Novus Ordo like it's some unicorn, and I still have yet to see one, but I suspect that they maybe exist, and if they do exist in the United States, it is in the suburbs or way outside the suburbs, way in the rural areas. Now, the United States is a huge country, Trad Patrick. Mm-hmm. It's huge. It's massive. You and I are road warriors. We drive from coast to coast. We drive across the land. We know exactly how big this country is. It's massive. You could take the entire country and park them in Texas, and it would be significantly less populated than New York. Okay.
Yep.
I mean, there's enough space in Texas really for the entire global population, and it would still be less populated than Manhattan on a per square foot basis. So we have a massive, massive, huge country. But my question for you is, your typical person, your typical guy, and I know from my podcast analytics that 85% of the people who listen to this are men, which I'm very proud of. And these men are husbands and fathers, and they are providing and protecting for their family. And they're thinking to themselves, I'm a software engineer, or I'm a janitor, or I'm an accountant, or I'm a school teacher. Trad Patrick, I don't know how to farm. I don't know how to subsist. Talk about the times that you have lived without running water, Trad Patrick, and you know how your family was able to adapt to that for those periods of times. And give a word of encouragement for people who are thinking to themselves, I can't be self-sufficient. I need the modern economy.
Well, let me give you an example of that. To this day, and that was probably about 9 years ago now at this point. To this day, my kids, even my older ones who are like 19 and 18, will say, you know what? We should just turn off the power and stuff for a couple days and just live like that again. Because once you get to that, you realize the gifts that God gave you, and you realize that you can persevere if given the opportunity, right? You realize that you can flush a toilet if you go and get a couple 5 gallon buckets of water from a machine for, 75 cents, as opposed to the modernist water system, which is going to cost you hundreds of dollars a month, especially in a place like Phoenix, where I was at the time when this happened. You're going to realize you can get away with not having gas by having a barbecue or burning wood and cooking your food on that. And this is what we were born for. This is what we were made for. We spent the better part of our society as humans without all these modern accoutrements. Okay. It's really, when you really boil it down, we were running refrigerators with blocks of ice from an ice man until about the late 1940s, early 50s, really, before we really get a refrigerator that you could plug in and has Freon and is cooling your food and everything like that. We lived like that for the better part of our lives. It's 70 years that we've entered into modernity. And in that 70 years, we have lost everything. We have forgot how to live. But when you are faced with it, you will remember how to live. And not only will you remember how to live, but you'll live so much happier because you will respect and you will appreciate the little things like sitting around with a candle on, reading a book to your family instead of your family watching a movie or playing a video game, or being outside collecting fireflies or running around in the woods and all these things. You're going to appreciate, you're going to go, why did I go this long with all this modernist stuff? Now, the flip side of that is, you're not going to move out there. You're not going to have the yurt and all this stuff, and you're going to be able to live off the land and pay your taxes and all these other things right away. This is where giving up comfort comes in. You're going to have to travel. But here's the other thing that our society forgot. You and I know it because we do it. But our society forgot that, again, up until about the 1960s, 1970s, it was perfectly normal for a father to go out somewhere and work for 3-4 months at a time, coming home only on the weekends or maybe once a month or whatever else to provide for his family. And he didn't worry about his wife cheating. He didn't worry about all these things because there was honor. There was a respect for the establishment and the sacrament of marriage. There was a respect for the father going out and doing these things. And even if the father didn't travel, sometimes he worked before the sun came up and didn't come home till the sun went down, would sit in his chair after dinner, fall asleep with a pipe and a newspaper. And that was normal. And he spent the weekends with the kids. And we've become so spoiled as a society that we believe that the father and the mother and everybody should be home 20 hours a day in our face. And we should have all these modern accoutrements and we should have all these things. But the reality is, I would give it all up tomorrow if I could, if I knew that I could afford at this point to provide from this day forward everything I need for my family without having to have that income that comes from the job. And maybe I'm closer to it because of my age. But the reality is that if you work hard and I screwed up, I didn't do it right in the beginning. If I did, I would be having this conversation right now because I would be not having this stuff. I would be already done. But if I could tell anything to guys who are younger in their early 20s and stuff, bust your ass now. Go out there, bust your ass now, get married, start having kids by the time you're 22 years old. You know, start popping out babies by the time you're 22. Don't stop doing that until you're in your late 30s, right? So you have like 8-9 kids, whatever, right? And realize that you don't have to ship your kids off to college. You don't have to ship your kids off to some factory, but you will have established yourself on a piece of property where your kids don't have to go nowhere. They work right there for you. And then they have their families, and their families live on the property. And then maybe you buy a little bit more because you have all that stuff, and you could take over the people who died next door or whatever, and you could buy their property and everything, and you can expand that, and we can recapture what Father Vincent McNabb had talked about when he talked about the church and the land. But you have to give up the comfort. And so few are willing to do that.
And that's what it comes down to. The biggest obstacle is comfort. And it's not just the men, it's the ladies too, but it primarily is the men. And this is why you and I get excoriated on Twitter, because we attack men who just want to be comfortable. They just want to watch Netflix and chill. They just want to play their video games. They want to wear their shorts. They don't want to sweat. They don't work with their hands. They don't want to learn a trade. They just want to sit there and be fat quarter pounder McBloggers. And this is not going to re-establish Christendom, because you're exactly right. The return to land movement that happened in the 20th century and sort of fizzled out, I think it's going to be reignited. And I want to be part of that movement. I know you do too. And I want to co-write something with you about it someday. And really encourage guys while we still have time. I know that we're both friends with Tradcat Knight. We're both friends with Anthony Stein. We're both friends with a bunch of people who sort of say, like, look, there's some time left, but there's not a lot of time left. Some people put it at 2029 when the chastisement really gets underway, et cetera. Because that's 100 years from, I don't want to go into it right now, but if you're listening to this podcast right now, and you're thinking to yourself, how do I get started? It's literally just a matter, correct me if I'm wrong, of trying to replace one thing at a time. Can I produce my own eggs? Can I produce my own milk? Can I produce my own meat? Can I produce my own salads, vegetables? How can I replace one thing at a time? Can I get into a local economy, at least within my parish? Does somebody have honeybees? Does somebody have goat milk? Does somebody have some product that I don't have to buy from Amazon, that I don't have to buy from the grocery store? Because at the end of the day, human beings survived on very little. I remember very vividly a podcast that Father Ripperger did, in which he was talking about how, you know, when he was growing up, the priest would say, hey, raise your hand if you have shoes for mass. Shoes. And if you raise your hands, You're rich. You're considered wealthy. I'm not saying that you and I are a little bit different in this regard. I have a much stronger emphasis, I think, on aesthetics and beauty and decorum and all these things. Also, I have the luxury of doing that because I haven't lived without running water except for my deployments to Iraq, Afghanistan, Korea, and the like. But for the most part, with my family, with respect to my family, I'm trying to rekindle, reconstitute, carry on the torch of tradition, European Catholicism, European culture, Western civilization, and all of those things. So even for me, I'm not going to till a field in a bow tie. Now, we get in fights on Twitter because we are trying to encourage men to be uncomfortable. To be uncomfortable, okay? To sleep less, to work harder, to sweat more, and to care, to give one thought to how you present yourself to your guardian angel every day, and to do what you're supposed to do with a moniker of decorum, which is appropriate to your state in life and which is appropriate to how you live. And so maybe we're not so far off from each other, you and I. However, I'll turn it back over to you. I look at it and I say, we need to learn the old skills. This isn't an alarmist propaganda. This isn't, you know, being hysterical and a conspiracy theorist and all this stuff. We all know exactly what you led your last answer with, that it's only been the last 70 years that we've had all these modern comforts. And prior to 70 years ago, everybody made do with what they had, and they learned how to cope with what they had. And you can either learn it now in a deliberate fashion, I think, and we can make the conscious choice to do more with less, and or we can just wait like sheep till the slaughter, and then we can show up to the grocery store one day and, oh, they don't have anything anymore. Oh, where am I going to get my stuff? How am I going to feed my family? That's not the situation. I would rather be, and I'll, this is my final question. I would rather be 5 years too early than 5 minutes too late.
Yeah. I mean, that's absolutely true. And I'm right there with you. Look, I tell guys, like, one of the things I hate more than anything is a 30-year-old guy in a suit with a backpack on going to work. It's like, are you so weak that you can't carry the few essentials that you need during the day in a briefcase in your hand, as you're going to wear a suit that you had pressed and you're going to get wrinkled with a stupid backpack like you're a kid going to kindergarten class? I mean, come on, grow up. But again, it's all based on your state in life, right? If you're tilling the land and stuff like that, are you wearing a suit and tie? No. You're going to wear coveralls or something like that, right? Because that's what you wear when you're doing that. But even that, to that degree, it's all about how you present yourself to the world, right? So you got the new summer of hate coming up and everything else, and the reality of the situation. I said this before: if you look like a target, you're going to be a target. So if you're out there in shorts and flip flops and a Superman T-shirt on, like Jimmy Church or Jimmy Akin, whatever the hell his name is, are you going to get picked on? Yeah. Am I going to get picked on? No. They're going to walk right past me, because the reason is that I present myself with a total appearance that, hey, come on over and mess with me, because I guarantee you, you'll be on the losing end of that. And it's the same thing with society. If you put yourself in a frame of mind, no matter what it is, to be on the land, to do these things and all this stuff, are you going to succeed? Yes. If you keep doubting it, if you keep putting in your head that you can't, you're going to fail. And that's the reality. If you go, well, I can't do without this, this, and this, then yeah, you're going to fail. It's a guarantee that you will fail. And in our society today, you know, you talk about people being coders and software engineers and stuff like that. The majority of those people work remote, pay extra money for a good satellite internet, turn off all the Netflix and streaming and everything during the day, only hook up your work computer to that internet, and you're going to be able to do work without a problem, without a glitch, without a hiccup, right? You're going to have the same problems there that you have in the suburbs with the giga speed and the chat speeds and the blah, 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 blah. You know, the same problems. The reality of the situation, again, it goes back to Father Vincent McNabb, and it goes even further back than him. It goes back to Father Heinrich Pesch, who's saying, you know, you got to give up this illusion that this modern world is somehow your new Mecca, your new Messiah, and that this modern world is going to give you everything that you need to succeed, because it's not. And it's being proven to you right now through COVID and everything else that they will take it away, and you will sit there and you will allow them to do it just like mass, while the entirety of the Novus Ordo post-conciliar church has bent the knee to the government, which, you know, everybody's out there like, oh, you're a fascist. You know, the church spoke out against authority. You know what? The fascists didn't wield a tenth of the power that the United States government has shown that it wielded during the last 2 years. That's what you don't get, and that's what people don't see, and that's why they refuse to turn it around, because society has made them slaves. They are operating in chains.
Trad Patrick with Rights and Duties. Rights and Duties on YouTube, Trad Patrick. On Twitter, it's been a pleasure, my friend. Thank you so much for joining me. Subscribe to his channel, follow him on Twitter, and get yourself ready for the end. Because it's coming.
Brought to you by Restoring the Faith Media. RestoringTheFaith.com.